nice is it to be together? It's so nasty outside. It's great to be in this warm, cozy space with all of you this morning. I especially want to welcome any visitors and guests who might be joining us. I'd love to invite you to join us for coffee after the service downstairs in Barnum Hall. We'll have coffee, but we're also having a potluck lunch today. And so even if you didn't know, and even if you didn't bring anything, please stay for lunch. There's always plenty of food, and there's lots of good cooks here, no doubt. So please join us for the potluck lunch. We're going to have a workshop, which I'll be explaining a little bit at during the service, too, and that may pique your interest as well. But at least you'll know more about it, even if you can't stay today. And feel free to ask other people any questions that you might have about what's going on this morning or anytime, or ask me. We invite you to bring all that you are, your beliefs and traditions, gender, race, class, sexual orientation, and the wisdom of your years to this congregation. You are welcome here. In our presence, may you always seek your truth, speak your truth in love, and live your truth through service. And through all your days and nights in our presence, may you experience love. Our opening words this morning from the Reverend Dick Gilbert. In our moments of doubt and despair, of problem and pain, let us remember that we're all in this together, and that together we can forge a path of possibility. In all our times of truth and triumph, of faith and fortitude, let us celebrate the best of what we share. And so we light our chalice this morning for the best of what we share, those values that tether us to one another and to this faith, providing a beacon of promise and hope on the path to possibility. I'd invite you now to rise in body or in spirit, and let's... Please be seated. And now I'd like to welcome Dick Danziger up. He's going to share the first of a series of congregants who are going to talk to you about why they believe it's important. And I'll just leave it at that.
Well, I want to remind you that 5 weeks from today, on March 31st, we're going to have a big pledge day. And you have between now and then to figure out how generous you want to be, right? And of course, the top line of importance is we're calling a new minister. We want to be sure we can offer fair pay and benefits. And to do that, we need to have a really good pledge drive so we don't have to tap the endowment. And we've had meetings and well attended. I think most all of you have seen all that information, so I don't need to say any more about it. Today, what I wanted to focus on was something that's very important about this institution itself, about UUCM, actually about us. We affirm and covenant with each other that the quest for truth is a sacrament. And of course, the word truth embodies some other things that are too long to put in a statement, but honesty, integrity, a lot of ethical principles, they are all involved in that important thing. And I have this feeling inside that outside the walls of this building, truth is under attack. And it's not just what we see in the news every day, politics and government and whatever, but I really think it's been going on for a long time, more than 10 years or more. And a lot of the institutions that we held high and used to revere, we don't think so highly of anymore, because they discovered kids were being molested, whatever, things were covered up. Honesty, groups that were supposed to stand for honesty didn't provide it. They weren't honest about what happened. And other religious groups who believe very closely with a text of the Bible and the Ten Commandments, and the words of Jesus and prophets, and hold those things to be very true, have over time sort of shown that they can set aside their beliefs when they become inconvenient. And I don't think that that's the case here. We've also have corporations and their accountants. We have policing departments that aren't equally government paying attention to the law and being honest about what happened. It goes on and on, and it goes back a long time. So to me, it's very important inside of our group that we care about truth and honesty, and we teach it to our kids, and we not only practice it here inside this building, but we carry it out. We talk about carrying out the light, and one of the important colors in that light is this color of truth and honesty, integrity, that we take to our friends and our workplaces, and we spread the word. We'd like to have more people come in here so we could spread it a little further, and maybe we can make that happen. So my comments really are that it's worthy. Oh, I should say one more thing. It's not just us who hold truth to be a sacrament. But if you went to any other Unitarian Universalist church, you would find they have exactly the same feelings. I, over many years and different jobs, I've been in, this is my fifth Unitarian Universalist church. Some have been small, large, different places in the country. One, Reverend Dick Gilbert's church, was a mega church. More than 1,000 members. And if you went there, you would find that they have exactly the same reverence for truth, honesty, integrity that we have here. You would, there'd be a lot of other things different, but you would fit right in, right? So I offer this up as something for you to consider, why it's important to support this place, make it vibrant, make it grow, and it does take pledges to do that. So that's all I have to say.
Our story this morning is called A Lamp in Every Corner, and it makes reference to Unitarianism in Transylvania, and I don't know if all of you know, but we have a partner church in Transylvania. And so we're very interested here in the form and shape and history of Unitarianism in Transylvania and all over the world. But I just wanted to mention that. That's the context for the story. Many years ago, in the land of Transylvania, in a mountain valley watered by quick rushing streams and shadowed by great forests of beech trees, there's a village of small wooden houses with dark shingled roofs. The people of the village were of the Unitarian religion, and they wanted a church of their own, a church set on a hillside. They decided, looking down upon the village as a mother looks down upon her sleeping child. And so all the people of the village labored long and hard to build themselves a church. The stonemasons hammered sharp chisels to cut great blocks of gray stone, then set the stones into stout and sturdy walls. The glaziers made tiny glass panes and fitted them neatly into the windows with leaded lines. The foresters sawed tall beech trees into enormous beams and laid the trusses for the ceiling, then covered the roof with close-fitting wooden shingles that wouldn't leak a drop of rain. The carpenters carved wood for a pair of wide-opening doors, setting them in strong pegs so that the doors hung straight and square. A bell was brought from a faraway city, then hoisted by ropes with a heave and a hoe to the top of the tower. The weavers wove fine cloths for their altar table, cloths embroidered with flowers and edged with lace. The smiths hammered black iron into tall lampstands and hammered thin bronze into shining oil lamps. And finally, when the building of the church was done, the painting of the church was begun. The painters mixed bright colors, royal red and shimmering gold and brilliant blue, and everyone in the village, old and young, women and men, boys and girls, came to decorate their church. They painted flowers. They painted trees. They painted designs around the windows and different designs around the doors. And at the end of the day, when it was finished, when their church was finally done, all the people of the village stood back to admire it. It was beautiful. And then to sing a song of happiness and praise. Their village had a church now, a church set on the hillside, looking down upon the village as a mother looks down upon her sleeping child. "We will eat now," announced the elder of the village, because everyone was hungry after their long day's work. "And later tonight, we can come back to pray." And so the people of the village went down the hillside to their homes and their suppers, all except one little girl named Zora and her father, who stayed behind. They had brought their own bread and cheese. They ate their food slowly, sitting on the grass on the hillside and admiring their new church with its strong stone walls, its tall tower, and its magnificent bell. After they had eaten, they went back inside, opening those carved wooden doors to go into the gloriously painted sanctuary inside. "Oh, look," Father Zora cried, running from picture to picture with her footsteps echoing off the stone walls. "See how pretty the church is." And she stopped in the center of the church and twirled slowly around. "See how grand." "Yes, it is," said her father, looking around and nodding with pride. "Yes, it is." "But Father," she said suddenly, "we haven't finished." "What do you mean?" "There are tall oil lamps, stands all along the walls, but there are no lamps. The church will be dark when the people come back." "Oh no, little one," said her father. "The light of the church comes from its people. You shall see." And he rang the bell to call the people to worship, then took his daughter by the hand and led her back outside. They waited on the grassy hillside next to their beautiful church of strong gray stone. The sun had set behind the mountains and the night was coming soon. Yet in the growing darkness, tiny points of light came from many directions and moved steadily up the hill. "Each family is entrusted with a lamp, little one," her father explained. "Each family lights its own way here." "Where's our family's lamp?" "Your mother is carrying it. She'll be here soon." The many lights moved closer together, gathering into one moving stream, all headed the same way, growing larger and brighter all the time. Zora's mother arrived, bearing a burning oil lamp in her hands, and Father lifted Zora so she could set their family's lamp high up on the tall iron stand. All around the church, other families were doing the same, and soon the church was ablaze with light in every corner, for all the people of the village had gathered to pray and to sing. And all through the worship service, Zora watched the lights flicker and glow. She watched her family's lamp most of all, And when the service was over, her father lifted her high. She took the shining bronze lamp from the lampstand. Its curved sides were warm and smooth in her hands. Her mother carried the lamp home with the flame lighting the way. The light flame lit their house when they returned home. Zora washed her face and got ready for bed by the light of the flame. "Mother," Zora began as she climbed into bed and lay down. "Yes, little one," her mother asked, tucking the red wool blanket around Zora's shoulders. "Father said the light of the church comes from its people." "Yes. But also the people take their light from the church." Over on the table by the fireplace, the shiny bronze lamp was still burning. "And we have that light every day." "Yes, indeed," said her mother, "and even when we're not in church, even when the lamp is not lit, we carry the light of truth in our minds and the flame of love in our hearts to show us the way to be." That light, the light of truth and love, will never go out. "Never?" asked Zora. "Never," said her mother. "And this bronze lamp will last many, many years. When you are grown, we will give the bronze lamp to you. And when your children are grown, you will give the lamp to them. And all of you will carry it back and forth to church every time." "But there's only one lamp," Zora said. "So make another and let the light grow. And someday tell your children to make more lamps too." "And now good night," her mother said, and kissed Zora once on the cheek and once on the cheek and once on the forehead. And Zora closed her eyes and drifted into dreams while her mother looked down upon her sleeping child. And as the years passed, Zora grew, and the bronze lamp came into her care. She kept it polished and clean, and when the bell rang out across the valley to call the people to worship, she carried the lamp back and forth to the church on the hillside, the flame always lighting her way. When the time came, she made more lamps and gave them to her children, who made more lamps and gave them to their children, and so it went on through the years, even until today. And always, the light of truth and the flame of love from that Unitarian church on the hillside continued to grow and show them and us the way. The end. Now it's time to sing the children out to their circle. This morning's reading is called Walking Towards Morning. You know, we do it every day. Every morning we go out blinking into the glare of our freedom, into the wilderness of our work and the world, making maps as we go, looking for signs that we're on the right path. And on some good days, we walk right out of our oppressions, those things that press down upon us from the outside and, as often, from the inside. We shake off the shackles of fear, prejudice, timidity, closed-mindedness, selfishness, self-righteousness, and claim our freedom outright. Terrifying as it is, our freedom to be human and humane. Every morning, every day, we leave our houses not knowing if it will be for the last time, and we decide what we'll take with us. What we'll carry, how much integrity, how much truth-telling, how much compassion, in case somebody along the way may need some, how much arrogance, how much anger, how much humor, how much willingness to change or be changed, to grow and to be grown, how much faith and hope, how much love and gratitude you pack these with your lunch and medications, your date book and your papers. Every day, we gather what we think we'll need, pick up what we love and all that we so far believe, put on our history, shoulder our experience and memory, take inventory of our blessings, and we start walking towards morning. Here ends the reading. Well done. Thank you. So I want you to think about this for a minute. What do you take with you? What do you take with you every morning when you leave your house? Besides your lunch, your keys, your meds, your phone, your date book maybe if you're a little bit old-fashioned like I am. What do you carry with you into your day that really matters? What do you carry with you into your day that really matters? What do you take with you that helps to guide you through the wilderness of life as you try to chart a course for what you've come to believe so far is the right path? Because we each do have the freedom to choose what we'll take with us. Integrity, truth, compassion, humility, humor, curiosity, and openness to change, and the possibility for new growth. Every morning we can set an intention of what we'll take with us into our day. These are our core values. Which ones do you carry with you? Can you name them? Think about it for just a minute. For whatever comes to mind, how do these values impact the way you lead your life? Do they light your way like a lamp, like a chalice? Do you set your sights on them? Do you follow them like a pole star with intention? The search for what matters most begins with a look at these values that we carry with us, the values that help us to make maps as we go looking for signs that we're on the right path. And what's true for us as individuals is also true for communities like this one. What core values do you as a community use as a lens for making decisions in your collective lives as a congregation? And how do those values, once identified, serve as a guiding light, a north star, as it were, in your life together, in your service? How we choose to spend our lives ultimately depends on what we believe gives our life meaning and purpose. It's those core values that give life its meaning, purpose, and a sense of direction. And even if you can't name them, I will bet you that each and every one of you are here because there are values that this congregation, this faith tradition represents for you that you want to guide you in your daily life. But can we identify some of those in common? It's important for the work of the church. Laura Park is a congregational consultant. She travels around the country helping Unitarian Universalist congregations find their sense of purpose and direction. She uses the image of nested bowls, bowls of various sizes that nest inside each other, to describe the importance of making these values explicit, and then creating a mission based on those values, and then creating ends or objectives in setting a course for the future. And the biggest bowl of all, the one that holds everything else, those are the core values. Values answer the question, what transcendent, timeless qualities of your congregation will you embody in all you do? What transcendent, timeless qualities of your congregation will you embody in all you do? The work of your governing board, your council, is to help you discern these values so that they can become a North Star for you, the lamp of truth, the flame of love, if you will, that you follow in all you choose to do together, giving your congregational life a greater sense of purpose and direction, helping you make decisions about what you do and don't want to take on together. The council's job is to see the big picture, but the important piece of this is to see the big picture through your eyes. If you're not in conversation with the council, they don't really know what this congregation holds in common. To be in conversation about that. The conversation that we're having after the service today is part of an ongoing process of reflection and discernment. Kind of a feedback loop, if you will, between you and the council, where you share what matters most in the life of this congregation, and then they reflect it back to you for fine-tuning so that they can do their work to help you do the work that you want to do together. They develop things like mission statements and policies and job descriptions that are grounded in the sense of what matters most in the grand scheme of things. If they're not tethered to those values, those things don't really mean very much. Laura Park writes, "It's not possible to make effective choices about how to organize roles within your congregation or how to control your congregation's finances without first knowing what values your organizational and financial choices need to align with, or what differences in people's lives your organizational and financial choices exist to create in the world. The purpose of congregational life," drum roll please, "is to unite individuals, each on a unique spiritual path, in community and common purpose." Right? We all come as individuals, and we all know that a big thing in Unitarian Universalism is the freedom to choose, the freedom to search. But if we can't come to some common understanding of who we are together, then what's the purpose of the community? What is the congregation for? It's to unite all of you, all of us, who are all on our own unique journey in community and common purpose, both. We get the community part. You all love and care for each other. It's a wonderful thing. But what's the common purpose? Why are we here? Why does it matter? So, what values do you hold in common? That's the bigger question that begins to define that sense of common purpose. And so this morning, for the balance of the service and in our time together after our potluck, we're going to focus on that big bowl, the values bowl. The big one that holds it all, because values hold everything else. So it's really important to have a big bowl, big, sturdy, and solid bowl, before trying to put anything else inside. And as an aside, but not really, I wanted to mention that there's a group of us reading the UUA's Common Read for this year. It's called Justice on Earth, People of Faith Working at the Intersection of Race, Class, and Environment. And we'll be gathering this Thursday at 6:30 for a potluck and discussion. So there is still time if you'd like to read the book and join us. There's a few copies left for sale in the church office. The book is about environmental justice. It might not be exactly what you think it is. After you read this book, that you'll find that there's a specific definition of environmental justice which addresses the particular ways in which communities of color and poor people are disproportionately affected by the impact of environmental degradation. Things like power plants, toxic waste sites, and pipelines, things that people empowered to have a say in the matter don't want in their backyard, right? Wind up in urban centers and running under the land of indigenous people. We see it over and over. It's part of that corporate pattern you were talking about and not being honest and truthful about the impact of these things that impact disproportionately populations that have been oppressed. That's what environmental justice is about. It's a really powerful book, and it's written by Unitarian Universalists, activists, speaking about the importance of intersectionality, bringing different voices together with people from different backgrounds to talk about this idea that the earth isn't just about this beautiful wilderness setting out there somewhere. It's about all beings on earth, including people who have been oppressed and are affected by these decisions that people in power make that result in things like, you know, like Flint. Kids with diseases and all kinds of things that we wouldn't wish on anybody, but we don't always know that it's going on. So it's really hard work because it's actually been covered up. Talk about truth. It's something we don't think of that much because it happens all the time, but it kind of happens under the cover of darkness a lot of times. One of the things that I noticed about this collection of reflections is that so many of the authors talk about the primacy of their values in this difficult work. In her essay on ethics, Sophia Betancourt writes, "Every day, our tradition, that's Unitarian Universalism, asks us to explore how the values we hold as sacred serve as guides for our decision-making and reminders of our accountability in impossible situations." It's hard work, sometimes near impossible. And she continues that this combination of guidance and accountability is the work of religious ethics, right? So our ethics are grounded in our values. They guide our lives and our work. That's the source of our integrity. In her essay, Jennifer Nordstrom says that the values of her faith that guide her work in environmental justice include returning to my source, love and commitment to life, no matter the result, the call to interconnection, being part of something bigger than yourself that matters to the whole. And last, but maybe the most important one in terms of this work, is that diversity matters. Intersectional analysis is bolstered by people who experience the world through different identities. One of the reasons it's so important for us to get out of our comfort zone and meet and talk to and interact with people who are different from us is because we can only have a plane of reality that's based on our experience. If we don't get outside that plane, we don't understand the experience of other people who've been oppressed. We need to talk to them. And so that's a big part of what this work around environmental justice is about. These values, they provide an ethical foundation for our lives, for our work, for our life in community and our congregational life that is both a source of strength and something to build on. Something to build on. So, what are the core values of this congregation? It's a process that we've been engaged in now for a little over a year. It began when I invited all of you to stay for another potluck and workshop conversation after church last year. And I invited you to share stories with each other about an experience you had in this congregation where you felt most alive, most motivated and excited about your involvement, connecting with others both within the walls and beyond the walls of this church. We captured your stories in a series of statements. You'll probably remember seeing them posted up down in Barnum. And then we asked you to rank the ones that were most important to you. Now, I really found it interesting that the statements that ranked the highest were actually programs and activities. They were faith formation, educational opportunities that help us learn. Worship, here we are. Diversity of services, and on and on. Music, here we are again. This is primarily where we share music. And social justice work, and a lot of those things that happen, like the community supper and the Anne Marie House and share involvement that we have, were also very important to you. These program areas and activities give us some really important information about ways you believe we can make these values, your values, real in the world, but they don't really say what the values are. Right? There's something that feeds those things, the desire for those things that we have. And so I invited the council a few months ago to take a look at all of the statements and to consolidate them into a set of core values, asking the question, why does this matter? What values are embedded in these statements? What transcendent, timeless qualities of our congregation do they represent? And these are the values that the council distilled from your stories, and they are on the cover of the order of service. Now, I want to make a disclaimer that this disclaimer is about language. I know that a lot of you like to wordsmith and words are really important. I don't want to say that they're not. But during this part of the process, I just want to assure you that this is a draft. There will be opportunities to amend and add words and talk about words that should come out and words that should go in. This is not the be-all and the end-all. This is an example, and we'll be adding to this. And for example, after hearing, I knew what Dick was going to talk about this morning, talking about the importance of truth, honesty, and integrity. None of those words are in our core values specifically, right? Our principle says the free and responsible search for truth and meaning, and what came out on this was freedom and responsibility. May not be exactly right. But today we're not going to focus on the words. I'm going to ask you to kind of put the words on in a parking lot that you think aren't there. When you meet in these groups later today, we're going to put the important words. We're not going to let them go. We want them to rise and bubble and come up to the top. But what we are going to do is we're going to talk about these values as they're stated here. Do they resonate? And how do they resonate and to rank them? As I mentioned, the council can't do their work without this conversation with you all. So I'm really glad that it didn't snow more and it's not like super slippery outside, because I had a vision of talking to an empty sanctuary this morning. And I'm really glad that you're all here to be a part of this. The appreciative inquiry process and creating the statements and creating this draft, it's all part of a process. And this meeting after the service will be another step in helping you and the council to clearly state your values. So you'll see that there are 9 values here. And the council got really jazzed when they were doing this work. They felt it was very meaningful to try to pull some of the values that were important to the congregation. That really created a lot of good energy, and I hope that having the conversation today will continue that. Spirituality, connecting with something larger than ourselves. Freedom and responsibility, determining our own beliefs. Human worth and dignity, working for human rights, justice, equality. Legacy, connecting with past and future generations. Unitarian, Universalist heritage. Community, welcoming and creating a sense of belonging, knowing we're not alone. Security, trust. Working together, helping others. Group efforts create that create results. group efforts that create results. Education. Now here's education as a value. Growing in wisdom and insight. The value there is growth. Aesthetics. I actually really like this one. The sense of wonder and beauty. I think it's really important to lift that up. It's important, especially that source of strength part of value.